Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good day and welcome to this, the latest interview, live on the Burr News Facebook page. I'm joined today by the Minister of National Security, Wayne Keynes. Minister, thank you very much for sparing some time.
Good morning, thank you for the opportunity.
You're a new MP.
Yes.
You're a new minister. You're a little over 2 months into government. How are you settling in?
It's been a phenomenal experience. A bit overwhelming in the beginning, but I'm enjoying the ride so far.
Everything going according to plan?
There's no plan. In the regiment, there is a saying that no plan survives contact with the enemy. In other words, as soon as you have a plan and it's tested, it all falls apart.
The National Security Ministry got a very significant mention in the throne speech. Mm-hmm. There was an awful lot for you to do, big agenda for there. One of those, which I thought was interesting, was the establishment of a police authority. Mm-hmm. The throne speech says operational control of the police service will continue to be the purview of the commissioner, but the time has come for a coordinated methodology by which strategic decisions can be made and clear input provided to the commissioner regarding police priorities. Why does the government want to go down this route?
Well, it's not necessarily the government. When you look at the minister's responsibility for the purse, for the police.
For the budget, yes.
And so if you say that we need police and we need the police officers in the school and we need police to be focused on gang operations, the police commissioner then, he has a different idea. So what the police commissioner and the team need an opportunity to understand what are the government's priorities? How do we help the government best execute what they want to see in policing? The police commissioner and I have had the discussion about what do you think is the best use of the police time, of the police resources, and I think a good way of getting that is a collaborative approach with the governor, with the police commissioner, with an independent person from the general public, and the minister with responsibility for national security. Now, understand what the ethos behind it is. The ethos behind it is not taking over policing. It's for this team to have a collaborative approach of looking at what are the key elements to focus on operational policing.
So have you got an idea exactly how it would work?
Yes, I think it would work. You have a body, and they would have regular meetings, and the opportunity would go with this is what the long term direction that we want to go as a country with reference to policing, and these are the things that we believe should be the highlight or the direction that we should go to. And obviously, the police commissioner will be responsible for everyday man management and the direction, but clear an overarching focus of what the police focus should be and in operational matters.
So, will the police authority effectively be the commissioner's boss?
No, not at all. I think that there is an opportunity for them to give direction with reference to the focus of operational policing.
So it'll be a suggestion rather than...
Not necessarily a suggestion, but there will be an opportunity for them to give guidance to the direction that,
right.
that they will go. Okay. The police commissioner still would not have the answering per se to this body.
Does that dilute the governor's influence and power?
Absolutely not. His powers are constitutionally given. He has a clear role. There is no way that this could dilute his power at all.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you will. I understood that the governor was responsible for the day-to-day, almost the day-to-day stuff, the strategic direction of the police.
Yes.
The operational, almost, the mm-hmm. priorities.
Mm-hmm. Well, he and everything that you said is correct. So this is not a body that's coming to usurp or to circumvent the rule of the governor. We have looked at this from a perspective in consultation with the police commissioner. We believe that there is an opportunity to look at some key areas with reference to policing and give an opportunity to say this will be the best use of personnel, this will be a best use of resource.
You say it's not going to get in the way of the operational day-to-day stuff, but isn't there a sense that if you decide resources should be concentrated on A, it's going to impinge on the operational ability of the police on B?
Well, the reality of it is if you look at both everything that you said in a vacuum, of course, it appears that these two ideologies will be boxing. You step back from it and you look at an overall plan for the Bermuda Police Service, an overall plan for the direction with reference to operational, then you have a long-term strategy. So this is not something that would be taken in isolation. If you look at the long-term plan for the Bermuda Police Service with reference to operational policing, I think it gives the governor, the police commissioner, the minister of national security, and that independent person the opportunity to put together a strategy with reference to operational policing. However, we're so used to in our system of it being acrimonious. We are so accustomed to something having to have a glitch or having to have a problem. I believe that the governor still has a clear role. The police commissioner still has a clear mandate. But I believe that there is an opportunity for us with not only saying this is what the budget is, but saying this is what the government sees we need with policing. How do we get a strategy that actually complements what you are trying to achieve and what we are trying to achieve?
Of course, the OBA, in its reply to the threat speech, said, quote, and this is directly about the police authority, we will wait to see how this will evolve and trust it will not lead to covert political interference in the police service doing their job. How do you react to that?
I won't react. I think the opposition have a clear mandate, and we have a mandate. I think just so you know, one thing that I have endeavored to do is to focus on what the role is in front of me. If every time the opposition says something and I doggedly follow it like a dog chasing its tail, then it takes away from being productive. I respect what the opposition, Her Majesty's loyal opposition, has to do, but obviously we have a bearing and we're going to set it and march directly onto what we have to do.
I'm familiar with the police authorities in the UK, as they were. There's now an elected police commissioner. Mm. And they were independent insofar as they didn't have any government. Mm. You've got government appointees on that. That doesn't make it that. Is your rationale behind this to be independent?
The rationale behind it is to give a clear plan to the police with reference to operational policing. So this is not an attempt at the government to interfere or to be malicious in any event. We believe that this is an opportunity to set an agenda for what's best. So in other words, the minister has the has control of the budget. Commissioner has the control of the operational policing. So sometimes you can't use the finances as a lever. It actually makes more sense to have a collaborative approach, to have an independent person on there using the benefit of all that comes to bear with the governor's resources and putting everything together for a policing plan.
And have you got a timeline for this?
Do not have a timeline. As obviously everything that we've from the throne speech, we're trying to do everything in the parliamentary calendar year. So I would say within the parliamentary calendar year.
And you've spoken to the governor, presumably, about
it. We've had preliminary discussions with the police commissioner. It's ongoing talks and long-term talks with the governor.
Okay. Now, of course, the other thing that was mentioned in the throne speech is the Police Complaints Authority.
Yes.
And just so our viewers are aware, it said, therefore, during this session, legislation will be introduced to give ordinary citizens greater confidence in the independence of the Police Complaints Authority. These amendments will enable truly independent investigations in the case of complaints regarding police conduct. How will it enable truly independent investigations?
Right now, the investigator that investigates matters with reference to police conduct is a police officer. It is a possibility that, so there is a maximum. Justice must not only be done, it must also be seen to be done. We believe that this is an opportunity for us to get an independent person, a person that has experience in the investigative realm. And sometimes a police officer might find it difficult to investigate his brother or sister officers. And when that investigation comes back and it doesn't go anyone's way, it can appear that it is has been some bias. I am not suggesting that the officer that has the responsibility for doing this investigation has been biased in any way.
Yeah.
I am simply saying that when you have an independent body that is doing the investigation, it has the appearance, it gives the outward manifestation that this is indeed an independent investigation.
So is the idea to appoint a civilian?
The idea is to appoint a civilian, yes.
And this has come about why? What's the reasoning behind this? What's led up to this decision?
That's a very good question. I think that over the years, there has been investigations with reference to the Police Complaints Authority. And it is just felt that it's time to look at the opportunity to create an independent body. It takes away any opportunity for anyone to say that with any police investigation that there has been interference in any way, shape, or form. Members of the public complain about police officers on a regular basis. If you look at the complaints that people, an officer stopped me, they were too heavily handed. An officer stopped me, they were disrespectful. An officer roughed up my son. And so there are complaints made against police officers all the time. And one can hear, well, nothing is going to happen because that is a police officer doing the investigation. So there's not any one incident that has caused us to be thrust into the limelight. We're simply saying it is time that we look at having an independent body looking at this particular civilianization of this post.
You said there's no one incident, but did the events on December the 2nd play a part in this?
I not necessarily played a part. That was something that caused this to have clear focus, a clearer focus. December 2nd incident, which is now being dubbed. Of course, it brought this to the fore, but I think that there are several instances and opportunities for this to be considered in the past. The Progressive Labour Party government came in. Now, as the Minister for Responsibility for National Security, I think it's an excellent opportunity to look at that closely.
I don't want to dwell on December the 2nd because a parliamentary committee is going to be formed to look into that. There is one thing that you've said in the past, that you are committed to supporting the Commissioner and his senior command team in securing that training. The various reports said there wasn't enough training to deal with these situations. And we must ensure that this kind of event does not happen again. Is this training been addressed? Are you satisfied with the way the police force is going now? I know it's only a couple of months, but this is presumably quite a high priority for you guys.
So I've spoken to the police commissioner since that incident on December 2nd. Senior members of the team that have the responsibility for elements of crowd and control, and if there is a national emergency, they have gone to take senior command course. Training has been ongoing. When the person says training is never something that happens in a vacuum, and it's never something that is on that stops. So if you're a police officer, whether you're a firearms officer, whether you're a police officer that has control of a captor spray, your responsibility is to have ongoing training. So training with reference to the Bermuda Police Service is taking place, and I am confident that on an ongoing basis that they would indeed have long-term methodologies and opportunities for training.
So you would hope, and it's impossible to pin you down on this, it's not fair to pin you down, but you would hope that if those situations arose again, it would be dealt with very differently. The training's in place to enable that.
I don't like to look at anything, so to put this 100% on the police, I think that is a unfortunate occurrence. Remember why this happened, yes? The reason why this happened, and so people talk about the December 2nd incident and they make it look like it is something that happened in a vacuum or this is just something that took place. People on this particular day said, we're going to create public discourse. We're going to do civil disobedience. This was created as a result of a major incident, i.e. the airport, where people did not feel there were any opportunities. So to put this on the police officer, that's myopic. What the change has to be is that our government intends on listening to the people. We intend on making decisions that do not benefit just a small portion of the country, that have a benefit to the majority of the people. And so this incident of December 2nd, we believe, was a series of unfortunate events that the genesis of them were a government that did not listen to the people, that were making decisions that were not in the best interest of the entire country. And so that is truly where the start has to take place. And we believe we're listening, we're putting in implementation, where we have plans and procedures and policies that not only benefit the rich or the working man, that benefit the whole country. I believe that in the long term, you will see less protest. You will see less opportunities. But if that opportunity for civil arrest does arrive, I believe that the police commissioner and his team will be in a better position, learning from these instances to benefit the people of Britain.
Another area that falls under your purview, which was mentioned in the throne speech, is the regiment. And a couple of fairly big issues here. It says in the throne speech that the regiment will assume responsibility for inshore maritime patrolling.
Yes.
What's the kind of timeline for this? Because it's been, your predecessor talked about this, it's been talked about for a while.
We're trying to have the lads on the water by the summertime.
Okay, next summertime?
By summertime, the next summer that we have in
June. So it's 12 months away. Right?
Absolutely. I believe that, as you know, they were quite active during the America's Cup. Many of them became special constables.
That's right.
Had the training. This will involve them going away for 5 to 6 months in training in the United Kingdom. And so during that time while they're being training, I am assuming that the Bermuda Police Service will continue their maritime roles. There has to be changes to the Defense Act. They have to be given powers of arrest. They have to be given the opportunity to carry captor spray in certain instances, firearms. We have to amend specific things. And so when you look at the legislation that has to be amended, when you have to look at the financing behind this, there are certain specific elements of it that have to be ironed out.
How many regiment soldiers do you think will be involved in this?
I think you're looking at 14.
14. Mm-hmm. And will that completely replace the Police Maritime Unit? I don't know how big the Police Maritime Unit is.
I believe that they will evolve to handover, changeover. The police would still have the ability, but I believe that the ethos behind it is for maritime policing to be taken over by the Bermuda Police Regiment, a captain or...
On a full-time basis.
On a full-time basis. A captain, a color sergeant, two corporals, lance corporals, and four private soldiers. They come in at a different range of salaries for them to be trained overseas to come back to be. They obviously will be made special constables with the rights that are contained therein. But the object is that you have. Listen, for years you've had a Bermuda regiment. I served as a captain in the Bermuda regiment. I was trained at Sandhurst. You have soldiers that came in under conscription, and it was almost seen as a reserve opportunity, but there were never opportunities for legitimate advancement. You have a private soldier now that comes into the regiment. If he has talents within the merit, he has a job. He can have the opportunity to make his employment full-time. So how does that benefit us all? Well, now that conscription will be ruled out in the next year, a soldier can look at the Bermuda Regiment and he can say, you know what, this is a phenomenal career. So the gentleman that was saying, well, you know what, it makes more sense me joining the Bermuda Regiment now, because as they start evolving, there's going to be opportunities for me to find a full-time job. That makes the Bermuda Regiment more attractive.
I want to come on to some of the stuff you touched on there a bit later, but just to concentrate on this a little bit, you said carry out some law enforcement functions. What kind of law enforcement functions do you think they'll be equipped to do?
I believe that there, and this is obviously has to go through the legislative process, and so I believe that the police, our Bermuda Police Service, going back to, and dovetailing the last point in, I believe that the Bermuda Police Service have to be freed up for operational policing. In other words, if we want to get to core policing, if we're saying that, you know what, we want to focus on drugs interdiction, we want to focus on community policing, we want to get police officers in every school, which is what people are crying out for, then we cannot have police officers sitting outside of the House of Parliament. We cannot have seven officers at the Magistrates Court. We cannot have officers at Government House, whilst all of them are having key roles, having Bermuda Regiment soldiers in those points, at static points, that can free up officers for operational policing.
So are you saying then there'll be an extension of the regiment powers?
What I'm saying is, if you look at the long-term objective has always been, remember, this is subject to budgets, this is subject to, and let me say this, the pundit will say, well, where is this money going to come from? And so what we have to do is we have to look at how we make this a viable enterprise without increasing operational expenses and making money. Money is the key focus. So our premier is a man that has always said in every decision that I've seen in every cabinet meeting, he has one of two objectives. How do we increase revenues coming into Bermuda, and how do we minimize and cut operational costs? And so keeping in mind, we believe that the Bermuda Police Service needs the opportunity to be freed up for operational policing. The Bermuda Regiment has the opportunity. Now remember, the Regiment has three functions as it stands now: national disasters, internal security, and ceremonial. We believe that there is an opportunity to increase those scopes of the Bermuda Regiment to allow these officers to have a key role, to give them key powers, which means amending a few laws, but not only does this give them opportunity for full-time employment, this makes the regiment a significant opportunity for employment. Go back to what the overarching theme was. Young men in Bermuda, they need the opportunity to find jobs. They need the opportunity to find work. Young women. This creates that. This is the wheelhouse for a young number of young men. When I went to the Bermuda Regiment, I am not very good with my hands. And so as a soldier, I struggled with disassembling the rifle. I struggled with certain parts of the Bermuda Regiment because it was a lot more hands-on, which wasn't my forte. I watched and learned respect for a lot of my fellow corporals on the method of instruction Carter and on my Carter colleagues, because guess what? These were certain things that they were very good at. They had no way of advancing that. So the regiment always became a passion, but when you're 32 years old and 25 with a family, it became something that you could no longer do because you had to have a primary source of employment. This now can be that for a number of our young men and women.
Do you then think that this might what you've just outlined might overcome what could be an issue when you end conscription, that you won't have enough volunteers?
So the Minister of Responsibility for National Security, the Director of Communications for the Bermuda Government, and the Colonel of the Bermuda Regiment, we have to tell this story. If you understand the psyche of the Bermudian, they felt that conscription had run its course. So they did not believe in the Bermuda Regiment or anything that they did tangentially. So if you have a Bermuda Regiment and people are not buying in that this is for me, I benefit from it, they were staying away from the Bermuda Regiment. I believe the narrative now has to change. This is a place for opportunity. Here are the five things that you can do. Career days, going to the schools, a direct feed for the junior leaders.
But they've been doing a lot of that, actually, haven't they, in the past?
And they have. But now we have to beat the drum, the proverbial regimental drum, if them now, come up through the junior leaders, create the passion now around the Bermuda Regiment, tell this story. And we believe that through all those indicators that the Bermuda Regiment, like the fire, like the prisons, Department of Corrections, and like the Bermuda Police Service, that they will be seen as significant employers for young Bermudians.
What will he do if there is a shortfall? It could happen.
If there is a shortfall, then if we have operational roles, we would have to look at going out and recruiting. We would have to look at putting ads in the newspaper for specific roles. I personally believe that the...
But it would impinge on your plan to free up police officers, couldn't it?
Absolutely. So that's why this cannot be done haphazardly. I believe, though, that with the amount of Bermudians that are not employed, we have to look at from a grassroots level. You cannot look at this in a vacuum. So you have to start in the schools with the junior leader programs. You have to do a huge marketing campaign. You have to target young men who are not going off to university or who have gone off to university and coming back. We have to show the benefits. And that is something that if you do in the circle of making this available, I believe that you will see you've never heard of the police service not being able to fill their numbers or their ranks. As a matter of fact, if you look at how many people have applied for the Bermuda Police Service, have applied for the fire service, you would see that this country has young men that need work, that want work, and this is an opportunity for them to work.
One of the Throne Speech promises is to appoint a gang violence reduction coordinator. You said on August the 9th that we should be able to make an announcement in the not-too-distant future. It was part of your 100-day pledge. Now, if you include July the 18th and weekend, you're on day 63.
Yes.
Are you going to do that within 37 days left?
Yes. We're in the final stages. Person has been identified. They have been interviewed. The Premier does know. We're literally in the administrative stages of it. As you know, in the Bermuda government, as much as you want to go the next day and say, whoop, whoop, in the Royal, there are certain things that you have to do administratively. This person has been identified. They are mounted and rearing to go. We hope within the next week to make this announcement public.
And he's Bermudian?
He is Bermudian.
Is it the same person as the OBA identified? They made a point of saying in the threat
speech? I thought that was interesting. So the OBA have identified a person. He is actually the person that they have identified. He is actually working within, as you can see, our board there. We have everything outlined. He is actually working within the ministry. He has a key role. We haven't highlighted it, i.e. made it public. But the person that the OBA have identified is working, and he's working well. This is a person that has a different remit and that will be playing a different role.
Tell me how this is going to work, because it's very important. And one of the things that crossed my mind is there's quite a few schemes already working, such as the Gang Resistance Education and Training Scheme, the Team Street Safe and stuff like that. Are we going to see a continuation of those, or are we going to stop while this person reviews all those schemes and makes recommendations? How is it all going to work?
So this person will be coming and working within a framework. The framework has been established, and it was established with the previous administration. We have gone in. We've met with Mr. Kennedy and his team at John Jay School of Criminal Justice. We have looked at the plan. Everything that has been implemented, we believe that there are some key elements in it that are working exceedingly well. Team Street Safe, the Interagency Gang Task Force, the Interagency Gang Enforcement Team, the Interagency Community Response Team. We have added some elements to those with a program which I'm very proud of. In the last 4 weeks, we have established a body that deals with moms, sons who have been murdered. And they meet every Thursdays. Mom's on a mission, Mom. And they have mental health professionals and counselors that have been meeting with them that they have access to. We've also created a clergy, interfaith, that are putting together a strategy. And so when you see the new person that will come in, they will see a plan that has been vetted, that has been augmented, and we believe that will have a significant benefit to it.
So this person will be there to push those plans and to look at other plans that may be appropriate.
Absolutely. But what is clear is that the plan has been vetted.
Right.
We have seen some places where we can improve it, and those improvements have been put in place, and this person will drive those initiatives forward.
On the topic of gangs, one of the things in the throne speech is the government will provide financial support to those who wish to break from their dependence on gangs to return to school. One of the issues perhaps in Bermuda, and please, this is a question, not a statement, please, is it seems that because it's so small, it's quite easy for those people to be dragged back into the gang culture. You're going to bump into your former gang friends on the street corner. How are you going to try and ensure that they go through this education and that kind of thing doesn't happen? Are you going to keep track of these people?
For the purposes of this interview, everything that you said, for me to put that in a soundbite is an oversimplification. There has to be a dedicated plan within the primary and the middle schools to change the way our young people think. And you cannot look at gang violence in a vacuum. We have to make education and opportunities.
Poverty.
There are about 7 or 8 different elements that you have to put together. But one thing that we realize is key, that we have to get into the education system, and we have to get into the middle schools and the high schools and change the way our young people are thinking. Create role models to create opportunities for them to be pulled out of the gang, retune and retweak how they think. This is not something that's going to happen overnight.
No.
Whenever someone speaks to me about the 56 murders that we've had as a result since 2009, everybody wants to see this thing change overnight. We're going to see green shoots, and it's going to take us a couple of years. We're going to see opportunities, but we have to change the way people think, the way they see themselves, and this happens with a long-term process of education. This happens. There are some things that we're going to have to do immediately, and that is with Team Street Safe. That is going into challenged areas and deal with people that are involved in antisocial behavior. But in the long term, that's going to take a process of educating. Something that I think that we're going to have to deal with, we're trying to come up with an anti-bullying campaign.
Right.
That's something that we're working on.
So there's cyberbullying and stuff like that.
And so there are specific things that we have to do. I mean, you mentioned the junior leaders program at the Bermuda Regiment, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. This is something that as a community that we're going to have to evolve back through. We are not going to handcuff our way out of this. This is not going to be policy driven. We're not going to do this through legislation. This is going to be something that is going to take a while, and it's something that we're going to have to work through with a long-term plan.
You mentioned about changing attitudes as regards gang culture. Now, one of the things also that was contained in the throne speech is road safety.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to change the attitude towards road safety? When we talk about here, the government will not tolerate impaired driving, and mm-hmm. you're going to have sobriety checkpoints and increased penalties. Now, sobriety checkpoints, that's been talked and talked mm-hmm. and talked about, and nothing's happened. There are more victims of road crashes than there are
yes.
gang murders.
So, this is clearly the purview of the Minister of Transport. So
there's a sense of yours because
I'm
the police.
I'm going to dovetail. I'm going to dovetail. If you just
the police will be doing the sobriety checks. But sorry, yeah.
As a country, we have abdicated a lot of the strength of our community to the police and to government. I'm saying that as a country, we're going to have to focus our attention on our road safety. We're going to have to focus our attention on group. Related violence. As you said, we're going to, and the Minister responsible for Transport, we're going to have to heighten through the Road Safety Council our campaigns that center around speeding, center around driving whilst impaired. But there has to be legislation, and the legislation will come this legislative year, because we have to look at road sobriety checkpoints and the benefit therein.
Well, there's been a constitutional issue there, hasn't there? Presumably
yes.
about so you don't do racial profiling.
Yes.
And again, that's been talked about for years.
But here is a challenge. I do believe that the Attorney General and her team can meet with the necessary elements, and you could put sobriety checkpoints there without, let's say it's every 14th person or every 15th person. But let's be clear. If you do a road safety sobriety check at North Village, obviously, the police commissioner and his team are going to have to do a road safety sobriety check outside of the Royal Bermuda Yacht Club. And so when you talk about the road sobriety checkpoint, it's not necessarily the problem of the road sobriety checkpoint, it's how it is executed. And so the plan is to have something that is robust in law, but when it comes to enforcement, that you have it. If you know it's going to be something at the rugby, then it's at the rugby. If you know it's going to be something at Rangers, it's at Rangers. And so as a community, if we have the honest conversation that no community has dibs or is exempt from driving whilst impaired or driving while having a bit too much to drink, if we execute that fairly and across the board, the word is egalitarian, in an egalitarian manner, I think that we can see this legislation having very strong footing.
Just final question, Minister. Your identical twin is the police spokesman. Mm. You ever get mixed up and causing problems?
On a regular basis, I think my brother.
Am I speaking? Which one am I speaking to?
I actually could be Dwayne. No, my brother Dwayne is actually, as you know, we're very close. Mm. And I actually feel sorry for him now. He had a button that was made that said, "I'm the other twin." because people come up with him on a daily basis and they tell him all the political challenges. And so, you know, for him, I'm sure that this must get quite tiresome. And sometimes he just has to sit and nod. I'm going to give him some of my business cards so, you know, he doesn't have to go through that every day. But I'm sure, you know, he's a good sport. However, you know, he does go through this really on a daily basis. When I was at Digicel, I mean, he kept 2 cell phones in his pocket because people came so much. But I'm sure now it's actually heightened a lot.
All right, Minister, on that note, thank you very much for your time.
Thank
it's
you.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.